I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Yes, so this is nowhere near to the power level of magic,
no.
But this is Bailey Hoskins. So there was a series, quite recently to be fair, 2016 I think, by Max Bemis and Michael Walsh, called The Worst X-Men Ever, otherwise known as Firecracker. I think that's kind of the nickname he tried to give himself anyway, but no one gave it to him because he's shit. But I just, this series was, it was set on an alternative Earth, TRN 656,
or yeah.
512 or whatever it is, but it was just so much fun because you couldn't, it was a five part, so you knew that it wasn't going to go, you know, stretch out too long. You knew that it was kind of set on an alternative reality, so it wasn't necessarily going to kind of interrupt with any of the other storylines. And it was a real, again, it was a comic that made me laugh, and that doesn't happen much. Bailey's power is he is a living bomb,
okay.
But not like, I think, is it Nitro in Civil War?
Who yes, can, that's right, Nitro.
Yeah. So Nitro can obviously regenerate, so to speak, can't he? I think
yeah, he can make kind of the explosion. It can have a body again. To explode.
Yeah, Bailey can't. So he is a living bomb, but can't regenerate. So he can literally use his power once, and it would be suicide.
It would be his death.
Which is so dark, but so funny for someone who's as sick as me. And the series is great because Bailey reacts in exactly the same way me as a nerd and a reader would react if I was told I was a mutant and had X-Men abilities. So he's excited, you know, he's a fan of the X-Men. He's really excited. And then he kind of learns his power and it all kind of, you know, dawns on him. And he has like a water boy role within the X-Men team. So he's like getting their water and stuff like that. Again, as with all of my choices, underrated X-Men, they are tragic. They are, you know, the X-Men are tragic as a concept. These are the tragic people within a tragic concept. So they are really the most tragic people that you can imagine. And what happens eventually is I think Mystique blackmails him to assassinate Xavier, obviously using his powers. Mm. And there's this whole alternative kind of future where someone called Riches, who turns shit to gold, basically.
Okay.
In a nutshell, he's kind of taken over the world. And I think eventually Bailey kind of sacrifices himself and saves humanity ultimately. But as a result, dies. You know, it is spoilers, but at the same time, it's a five
kind of see it coming.
Issue series about a kid who can only blow himself up once. So you kind of know what's going to happen eventually. But it's such a fun read. And the character is so, he's cute. You know, he's cute because he's he's just an excited boy who's basically been burdened with this horrendous ability. So Bailey Hoskins is my quite out there fourth choice.
Fair enough. I think that's a really good one. I've read the first issue, but I've not finished the series, but the first issue was very fun, so I need to go back and finish that.
Yeah, finish it off, even though I've just spoiled it for you.
Max Bemis is he's in a band, isn't he? Is Say Anything, I think.
Oh really? I still listen to NSYNC, so
fair enough. Well, on that note, let's move over to another villain.
Okay.
So I've gone for Mojo. Not Mojo Jojo of the Powerpuff Girls, not to be confused with him, but he is basically an absurdist parody of every slimy TV executive ever. But he's also a despotic ruler of his own dimension as well.
Named
after himself, Mojoverse, of course. So he was introduced into the pages of Longshot. So this is not, Longshot was not necessarily related to the X-Men at the time, but he was kind of brought in and kind of adopted by the X-Men after a while. And so a lot of
is he a mutant, Longshot? Or
He's not. He's a generic. No. Modified kind of creation. The Mojo and their race, the spineless ones, because they're basically worms, they created a race of slaves. Based the slaves were based on their nightmares they had because their universe received these transmissions, and it drove their whole race insane. Turned out it was television broadcasts from the main Marvel universe that drove them insane. And that's why their whole world is based on like TV and ratings. Like ratings equals, you know, superpower and political power as well in Mojoverse, which is, I think, is great. And it's a bit, it's great satire every time Mojo turns up. It's absolute brilliant satire of the kind of television industry and all that sort of stuff. And Nascenti created the character, and it was based on real life, the real life writing of people like Noam Chomsky and many of his contemporaries, because they were slime balls as well, in her estimation. Arthur Adams, who does the art, he was asked to make him look as disgusting and disturbing as possible. His design is basically kind of, he's this big, fat, yellow creature with big arms, and he has a kind of scorpion, cybernetic scorpion-type body, and he has these wires that he's totally, like, plugged in, and the wires are holding his eyes open, almost like he has to constantly watch TV to know what's...
Like Clockwork Orange-style face, isn't it?
It was actually inspired by Clockwork Orange, in fact. It's quite funny, because he basically loves these kind of gladiatorial-type games, so it's like, like Running Man. It's basically a bit like Running Man, you know, every adventure with him. But he has these other dimensional powers. He's very proficient in magic, but also has like a deadly cybernetic body as well. But he basically, again, obsessed with ratings, obsessed with getting, being top of that board. What's the next big thing? Like, he created the X-Babies, which are basically just baby versions of the X-Men, because he thought that the cutesy aspect would get more ratings. Again, fantastic, fantastic character. I love him so much. Once, this is pretty messed up, but when he was introduced into the kind of X-Men canon, he abducted Psylocke, which was Captain Britain's sister, who took up the role of Captain Britain for a while until she had her eyes pulled out by Slaymaster, who's a villain of Captain Britain. And Mojo captured her, replaced her with cybernetic eyes. And then when she joined the X-Men, he would broadcast their adventures from her eyes, so he could get the ratings up and promote the X-Men as the next big thing, which is, again, a work of genius. One of my favorite things was, we were talking about Wonder Man on the last podcast, for some reason. I think I remember we were talking about him. He once hired, Wonder Man to sign a contract with him for an acting role. And then when he got him on board and saw how bad an actor he was, he fired him straight away. Just genius.
How have we not had Nathan Fillion Wonder Man scenes in the MCU yet?
I think that's what we were discussing last time. He was once deposed by a clone of himself who goes by Mojo 2, the sequel.
Great. I love it.
And he also once struggled for ratings against a show about chickens. So that was top of the billboard in Mojoverse. That was a very popular show. That was your game.
I mean, at some point, surely, we've got to have a Mojo kind of Netflix-esque story. Or maybe like a Mojo kind of tries to kind of insert, diversity, but too much, you know.
in the wrong way.
Who horns it in without any kind of knowledge of stuff, which, you know, some executives might be doing on certain things.
I'd love to see like a Tales of the Crypt type thing where he introduces an episode and then it's about maybe like a singular X-Man and their adventure, or, you know, like a dupe adventure or a maggot adventure, something like that.
Well, he's like, I was going to say dupe kind of perfectly fits into that Mojo verse world. You know, it's that ridiculous, absurd stories, colourful. You know, nothing's off charts, you know, with a Mojo story. And yeah, I think the, again, the satire part of it is always very clever.
Yeah. And it kind of works, and it will always kind of work on some level, because we'll always have some sort of kind of televised, you know, or YouTube videos, whatever. We'll always have something like that. But I think his most evil thing that he ever did was in 2016, he revealed to Howard the Duck that he actually created the 1986 Howard the Duck movie.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
So I think that's definitely, of all that, you know, he's had slaves, he's, you know, he's
trying. That is dastardly beyond belief.
That's the most evil thing he's done. So did he take the form of George Lucas then, maybe?
Never forget duck tits.
Duck tits. Woo! But yeah, that's Mojo. If you like slimy, yellow, spineless ones, he's the character for you.
No, that's a great choice. I love it. Jabba the Hutt on stilts.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I could see that. What's your next one?
Okay, well, this is my last one, I believe. So my last one is Trevor Hawkins, a.k.a. iBoy. So I am going to be predictable and return to my favourite series, Wolverine and the X-Men, by Jason Aaron and Chris Bucalo. He debuted in issue 19 of that. So it kicked off quite a bit, actually, already. And he was very slowly kind of integrated. You kind of saw him in classroom scenes and stuff, you know, in the background. And he'd have the odd line here and there. And very kind of slowly integrated. But basically, in a nutshell, his power, he has eyeballs everywhere. Eyeboy. Okay. He's got multiple eyes. But over time, throughout the adventures of the, you know, Jean Grey school, he learned new things about his powers. So he could basically pick up, because of all the eyes on his face and body, he could pick up power signatures. He could see power signatures.
Oh, wow.
See radiation or see electricity or magic that other people couldn't see.
Kind of
which was, yeah, anything beyond human vision, so to speak, he could potentially see or sense. And that came in handy, you know, in various adventures. This is a strange one, but because of his eyes, he was an expert on body language. So he could sense the most minute bit of like body language, or if scenery had changed slightly, you know, he could sense that. Yeah. And so on the surface, you know, these are all fairly kind of useless powers, but little did the team know that Trevor was basically going into the danger room at night, and he was secretly training himself in combat. And because of the eyes on his body, it heightened that sense, and he's actually an expert marksman. So he could probably give the likes of Hawkeye a run for his money, or Domino or whoever, because, you know, he can see all, you know, So
being covered in eyes, that'll make him like super sensitive to like light and things like that, or just super sensitive.
You think that? I think they might have glossed over that. I'm not sure.
Because like, when I get something in my eye, it's horrendous.
I guess he can just kind of cover that eye, and he's still got, you know, 50 left. He's another character that comes across in a kind of very meek fashion. You know, he's this skinny, long blonde-haired boy. Kind of looks like he should be in Hanson. And again, the visually, you know, the mutation is out there. You know, the eyeballs are all there on his face for the world to see. And I loved that he was kind of ashamed. And I think a lot of people weren't really, took him for granted, you know, and the idea of him secretly kind of training to become this expert marksman, you know, in the danger room. And then what happened in issue 29 of that series is there was like a flash forward to the future, or a version of the future. And he's at this point based like a space shuttle that circulates Earth. And he's almost like a monitor for planet Earth. So he's like looking after planet Earth. So he can see everything, you know, on Earth, basically from space. He can sense everything and sense attacks. There is then a attack, and he kind of goes into space gun touting. He's wearing this like all black suit, almost like a black gimp suit. And then all these glowing red eyes kind of appear on his body. And it's just, I love that in the future, he's basically a badass, but we're kind of experiencing him as this kind of, you know, pathetic young boy that everyone basically takes the mick of, out of. And again, yeah, it's a similar thing to a lot of my choices. It's that kind of Frankenstein-like character that is actually really sweet and good-hearted, and but kind of lethal, really, and is taken for granted. So, yeah, iBoy Trevor Hawkins is my choice. And I just think, again, art-wise, you can do so much with that. You know, he has this kind of long blonde hair, but you're thinking, you know what, make him a skinhead and put the eyes on his head, and you know, there's so much you can do with that. Eyes in his hands, you know, you could have a kind of Pan's Labyrinth thing. And so that was a lot of fun. And I love the way Chris Bucalo kind of draws stories. I think he's one of my favorite artists. I think it's just full of character. And I think
he's really good, like you said, at like the vision. He's very visually interesting when he gets a mutant that's very visually, you know, expressive. I like a lot of his Generation X stuff that he did, when he gets like a really good visual interpretation of a character, of something that's visually interesting. That's when he's at his best, I think.
And Wolverine and the X-Men is full of characters like that. You know, you've got Brew, who's like a spawn of one of the brood alien species, but he's actually become hyper-intelligent. So again, it's that monster who's, you know, like Beast, actually super intelligent and well-spoken, and, you know, and so there's a lot of fun characters like that in Wolverine and the X-Men, which is why I, as you can tell from the last hour or so, I'm a big fan.
You are a big fan, and I think a lot of people will go out and read it after your choices, but yeah.
Please, there will be no regrets, and if anyone wants a refund, you can contact me. I won't give you the refund, but contact me, because I will fight you, because it's just that good.
Just don't at us. Don't at us at all. But a very good choice. I liked your five. So I think usually I try and bring the most obscure things to the table, or the most kind of, you know, the ones, things people haven't heard of, because that's the point of the podcast, is to, you know, underrated media, underrated characters and stuff. But I think you've topped me today. Absolutely topped me with all the obscure choices.
I said about this as an idea, I knew I had these guys in the bag, and these were just five. I could have done 15.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you could.
I'm telling you. Well, right, like, give me your fifth.
This is it. Number one. Danny Moonstar. So Danny Moonstar was
another New Mutant.
New Mutants again. New Mutants. Now she's the leader of the New Mutants as well. She was born a Cheyenne Native American with the ability to pull your greatest fear from your mind and then present it to you in a realistic holographic illusion.
And so horrific.
That's a terrifying superpower on its own. Like, when it works, it really works. When she was younger, though, she struggled to control it, which actually led to her kind of a lot of her relationships deteriorating and being ostracized and, you know, not making friends. She can't help it. She just goes, that's what you're afraid of. I'm going to show it you and everybody else what you're afraid of, which obviously is quite makes a lot of people quite insecure. But When her powers, she was depowered during M-Day, but it didn't matter to Danny, because she is an expert hunter, tracker, a weapons expert, from bows to hunting knives to guns. She has just this wealth of kind of tenacity and hard-headedness, this stubbornness. Like, she came to clash it with Xavier almost all the time, and that's why he made her the leader of the New Mutants. Because he was like, right, well, if you think better, show me. You do it. Like, for example, Xavier said, you're going to wear the original X-Men uniforms, gold and blue. That's it. She went, nope, I'm going to wear all these accessories that highlight and honor my Native American heritage, and you can't stop me. And I really like that about her. But yeah, during M-Day, she lost her powers, but again, didn't really phase her, because she's that good at everything. Cyclops has even said that she is a tactician on his level at his age, when he was as young as Danny was. He was at the same kind of level of strategic prowess. You know, we're talking a good level. And she's been in every team under the sun. She's been in the all-female Fearless Defenders. She's been in X-Force, New Mutants, you name it. And she's always had a huge role to play, and has been an incredible presence on any of those teams. She's gone from having crazy cosmic abilities to, you know, her original abilities to no abilities, but it's never phased her. It's never stopped her doing what was right and what is her kind of her passion to do. And she was basically the lead character in most of these New Mutant series. The most famous storyline, the Demon Bear Saga, which is what the new film is based on. She played the lead role, and it was based on her backstory and on her, you know, everything to do with her. She was the lead character in that story, and that is exactly why they picked it, because Danny is such a great character. It's a great story. It's a scary story. It's a disturbing story. And the demon bear killed her parents. She actually, her powers have some sort of a kind of precognitive ability, so she can see what is going to happen, like some of her deepest fears, or fears what happened to her grandfather who got killed, or her parents who got killed. She can see that. And she journeyed to journeyed to Asgard, and she met up with Hela, the goddess of death. And she gave her, she basically indoctrinated her into the Valkyor, or the Valkyries. and gave her all the kind of abilities, so enhanced strength, speed, stamina, gave her all the weaponry and the armor, and even had a flying horse called
Blimey. I was going to say, a horse, that's the first thing I'd want if I was made of Valkyrie.
Exactly, you want the, definitely want the horse. You'd
forget about everything else, Pegasus, get over it.
Call me a Pegasus. But yeah, so then she had the weaponry to go along with it, and again, master with all these kind of weapons. She lost those powers, you know, in the 80s, but she kept maintained the precognitive powers, which were enhanced, so she could see, literally see death coming. She even fought death and won on several occasions, the personification of death, or Lady Death, or Madam Death in the Marvel Universe. You know, she is a badass. She's probably the most badass female X-Man out there, X-Woman out there. I love her in all the stuff. In anything I find her in, I'm like, yes, more of this. One of my favorite kind of badass moments she has is she's been tortured for quite a while, and her arm has been broken, and she gets a bow and arrow and fires it with her foot, and gets like an instant kind of headshot on this villain, which is just absolute badassery from Danny Moonstar. I just think she's great. She's up there for me. She's up there with a lot of the kind of main X women. You know, up there on, you know, Storm level. She's just, it doesn't matter about the powers, she can have them, she can not have them. She's just still incredible and an incredible leader. I just love her so much. She's so bloody good. You can't fault her. She even, when she got her, she had to, when she lost her powers on M-Day, she bargained with Hela to get her Valkyrie powers back and kind of sold her soul a little bit to Hela to do that. This upgrade, this power upgrade, allowed her to pummel Ares, the god of war, the Greek god of war, you know, into a bloody pulp. And, you know, the Ares, the god of war, is on Thor, Hulk, Hercules strength level, like power level. So that is impressive in its own right. But she also, like, she couldn't have just done that with physical strength. She has the capable fighting prowess to do that. And then that upgrade just helps with that. Brilliant character, brilliant new mutant, brilliant X-Man, leader, tactician, all of those. Just fantastic. I love this character so, so much. And I need to read more of her stuff all of the time. Give me more. Give me more. But yeah, that is my number one underrated X-Man.
It's a great choice. I think the you know, that team, the New Mutants, all could have been in this countdown in their own way. I'm a big Cannonball fan. Although Cannonball has got a bit of love in the comics recently with him joining the Avengers and whatnot.
Sunspot joined as well.
But I mean, Cannonball, again, it's another power that just looks horrific. You know, the bottom half of him explodes. So yeah, no, that whole team. So I commend you on your choices there.
Why, thank you.
So, can we have some shout outs? Have we got time for some shout outs?
We do.
How long we got?
I think we've run over a little bit, but that's fine. I can cut it too. Don't worry.
Another hour.
More. Let's do more. Another five.
quick shout outs then. Toad is a villain one for me, just because I'm a massive fan of Toad. I've dressed up as classic Toad before, you know, Ray Park Toad. I love the idea of this like pathetic kind of henchman, you know, Toad by power and Toad by personality. You know, it's I love that kind of jester costume that they put him in, almost, you know, to humiliate him even more than how he does himself. Then he was kind of obviously made a little bit badass by Ray Park, and that works just as well. You know, it is actually quite cool, you know, his power set, if you portray it in a different way as well. And I love both versions. Again, I know I'm sounding like a broken record, but Wolverine the X-Men has Janitor Toad, which was just genius. It was funny. It was tragic. They did this weird kind of like secret love story with him and Husk, and it was kind of beautiful and tender, and I really like rooted for them. And so, big fan of that. While I'm on the subject of Wolverine and the X-Men, I could probably list all those kids, but Quentin Quire is not only an underrated X-Men, he is my one of my favorite. I'm not going to say favorite because I still think Colossus holds that for me, but Quentin Quire is up there to the point where I have a Kid Omega tattoo on my arm. It was one of the first tattoos I ever got. Yeah, I'm holding it up to you now on Zoom. He's got flames in the background to represent his Phoenix Force ability, that he can harness the Phoenix Force. He is a little shit. He started as a villain. You know, he was a a potential terrorist, basically, for the X-Men. He obviously has these really kind of right-wing views. Again, probably more the kind of Malcolm X side of thinking, you know, Magneto camp. But he's reluctantly been forced into life as an X-Man, and slowly, very, very slowly, like to the point where 6-7 years, they've really drawn out this process of him kind of becoming heroic, you know, and reluctantly doing the right thing. He's still a little shit, and he's a gobshite, and he's a punk, you know, he's a little punk, basically, and they kind of do that in the way that he's drawn and things. But yeah, so love him as well. I mean, I could go on forever. Thunderbird never came back.
Yeah.
So many X-Men were brought back from the dead, and yet Thunderbird, bless him,
I think he was lost on that plane and never came back. I think it's because we have Warpath instead. I think that's probably why they've never really...
Yeah, they kind of brought in Warpath, and yeah, again, it just kind of felt a bit weak that, you know, here's his son who's very, very similar.
Was it his son, or... I think it's brother.
Grandson? Brother?
I think it's John and Jane.
From another mother?
Star, wasn't it?
But yeah, so, I mean, the X-Men is full of characters like that, and that's kind of the joy of it, really, is that they could honestly release hundreds of spin-offs, because each character, each even background character, the likes of Beak and Eyeboy, resonate with people in profound ways, really. So they're my little shout outs anyway. I needed to make sure that I got those off my chest.
I've got a relatively long list, because I found this very hard list to make. So I'm just going to reel them off really quickly for you, okay?
Give us a top of the pops, like, style, yeah, at number 10.
Nightcrawler, Legion, Warlock, Selene, Dr. Nemesis, Caliban, Havoc, Arcade, Mad Jim Jaspers, Cameron Hodge, Vulcan, Silver Samurai, Lockheed, Karma, Gladiator, Multiple Man, Polaris, Lilandra, Agent Brand, Proteus, X-23, Warpath, Sauron, Megan, Rachel Summers, Glob, Blindfold, Moira McTaggart, Phantom X, Banshee, Sunfire, Dust, Strife, Anole, and the most underrated X-Man, Dazzler.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm literally not going to dispute any of those at all. Dr. Nemesis sticks out for me as a great choice. Again, another lovable asshole. The X-Men's full of them. Arcade, I think you mentioned there as well. A great villain there. Again, visually, you can have so much fun and be so ridiculous with the Arcade stories. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, so that's great. There's great.
How often do the, you know, the X-Men in the movies end up in like a giant pinball machine?
I know. There's not many characters that do, really, but the X-Men seem to constantly be in pinball.
There you go. Brilliant. We've got a few listener comments. I put up a very late post about this because it was kind of all the research I was doing and other stuff I kind of forgot. So just did it.
It's a very busy time during lockdown, Dan. We're all very busy.
So Andrew Ferguson, his underrated X-Men he mentioned was Pixie, Armor.
Yep, good choice.
Rockslide and Cyclops.
Okay, Cyclops is an interesting choice because I think Cyclops got a lot of... I hated Cyclops as a kid in the animated series. He was always my least favourite. Mm. I was never drawn to him when I started reading comics with the original stuff and the Jim Lee stuff. And then it was that Uncanny X-Men series with Bendis that turned things around for me, where Cyclops finally kind of snaps.
Yeah.
And we get that assertive, you know, Cyclops was right style. And I'm a massive fan now. So, yeah, I think that's an interesting choice.
I think so, too. I think a lot of his stories, like Schism's a good one for Cyclops. And I think a little bit before, I think after M-Day, I thought he became a lot more interesting because he was forced to make some really difficult choices because they were an endangered species now. Mutants after M-Day, he was forced to make choices he never would have usually.
They were desperate. They were desperate, and it was interesting to see exploring what people might do when they're desperate and how that might change people.
Exactly, and I think he's a good character. I think a lot of people, again, in the movies, he was very mishandled, misused. He was basically just the other guy in the movies, an obstacle for Wolverine, so he didn't get to shag Jean Grey. I'll be honest, controversial opinion, but I don't think Jean Grey and Wolverine, the romance, I don't think ever really worked for me. It was never one that I kind of got on board with for the most part. I kind of think it wouldn't...
I think it's mainly lust on both sides, honest. I think that's the way I've always read into it.
I think if you ever put them together, it would have felt very wrong. Moving on, Michael Chandler. I'm sure you're a friend of Michael Chandler.
Oh, that guy.
He suggested Beast, another original X-Man, Mr. Sinister and Sauron as well. And then my flatmate Matthew Catterall has responded and said, suggested Titan. Now, he doesn't know comics, so he picked a name out of the blue and it was like, that's probably a character, isn't it? And I went, sadly, yes, he's actually a member of the Imperial Guard of the Shi'ar. He can grow to kind of massive heights.
There was like 20 Imperial Guard or, you know, Shi'ar type characters. There's like 20 odd, like.
Yeah. Well, based on the Legion of Superheroes, and they're like, there's like 30 of them. So that does not surprise me.
Wolverine, the X-Men, Kid, Gladiator, just saying.
Oh yeah, he's pretty cool as well, actually. I was wondering if you could get one more mention.
I've realised I've got a problem after this.
I think maybe you need to branch out a bit more in your reading habits.
if Jason ever listens to this, he knows he's got a fan though, which is good. I mean, he's got a few fans, but
well, that was Matt Catterall, who's also been a guest on the podcast. That's at MXCat on Twitter. Marcus from the Marco Guy on Twitter said, "I've always been a fan of Shadowcat. Kitty Pryde."
She's kind of going through her swan song currently, I feel like.
Really? Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, there's some really interesting stuff going on with her character. So she's running this Marauders team, mm-hmm. and they've almost like kind of given her this like pirate-like attire, and she's got a broken nose because she couldn't get into Krakoa, and she's pissed, and it's kind of great. And but like she had that defining moment, similar to Colossus.
Yeah.
So I think Joss gave her some love during that, because before that, I think she was a bit pathetic. And
she was partially the inspiration for Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh right, okay.
And Cyclops as well, because of Buffy Summers. There you go.
There we go. Do you know what? I thought I'd come on here not learning anything, and I was wrong.
Well, there you go. There you go. Information.
One thing.
So, yeah, that's us. So you can find us on the podcast or Facebook at Secret Balls. On Twitter, it's Dan_Balls. Instagram, Spider Dan the Secret Balls. And the podcast is available on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, many, many more. Where can they find yourself, Ben?
You can find me on YouTube now. I know when I did this with you before, I was in hibernation, but... due to the current situation, I'm so bored, I've started making videos for no one to watch again. So if you are that way inclined, go to YouTube and search Straight Outer Crampton. Outer spelt like incorrectly, O-U-T-T-A. And you will find me and hopefully some hilarity around what's going on at the moment.
I'll tell you what, I'll tag your YouTube channel, the link, or in the posts. That I make
do it. Any help Facebook is needed.
But it's good stuff. It's good stuff. So I'll be watching, definitely. Thank you so much for joining me today. I know it's not as intimate as being in front of you, but it's a close approach.
I've loved it though. I've loved it. I could honestly talk about X-Men for a silly amount of time. So I've really enjoyed it.
We could always do something new or something else on X-Men whenever you fancy. Whatever you fancy, let me know, because I'm very much open for ideas at the moment. If you guys have any ideas for podcasts, I'm going to be off for the next 3 weeks. So I've got a lot of spare time. I'd like to keep myself productive. So yeah, any ideas, let me know and we can do another one with yourself or any other ideas that maybe the fans want us to come back again and they'll pick something for us to do, perhaps.
What do you want to hear my monotone voice talk about for an hour and a half?
Anything.
Let us know.
It's a lovely voice. don't sell yourself short.
I sound like Zippy from Rainbow. Don't worry about it.
Right. Well, that's us. Hope you enjoyed this one, guys. And we'll see you very, very soon.